This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. Or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com.
Welcome to Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. Thank you for downloading and listening to these podcasts. I hope you're getting something out of them. We seek to bring you the latest truth in science every week, as Dr. Hoffman and I both do. If you'd like to email me with questions, topics of interest, radioprogram@AOL.com. is the destination for questions and topics of interest. If you don't already subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine newsletter, you may do so by going to drhoffman.com and click on subscribe. It'll be on the upper right-hand corner. You may unsubscribe at any time. The newsletter is free, as are these podcasts, and we don't use your email for any other purpose. Well, now, this is something we already know, but it's something that I want to reiterate, the difference between doctors and nutritionists. What is that difference? Medical education not covering basics of nutrition. We know that diet plays a huge role in health and wellness, and can be crucial to managing many common chronic conditions. Medical schools tend not to devote much time to teaching future doctors about nutrition, a research review suggests. Researchers analyzed data from 24 previously published studies that focused on medical students' nutrition knowledge and confidence in their ability to counsel patients on diet. Overall, nutrition was insufficiently incorporated into medical education, regardless of country, setting, or year of education, the review team found out. Insufficient nutrition education impacts on students' knowledge, skills, and confidence to include nutrition care into patient care, said Jennifer Crowley, a researcher in nutrition and dietetics at the University of Auckland in New Zealand. When students do not witness nutrition counseling by senior doctors, it does not become part of holistic patient care and continues into their medical practice. Also, the importance of nutrition for a healthy lifestyle is not reinforced with patients, says Crowley. Worldwide, obesity rates have nearly tripled since 1975, according to the World Health Organization. As of 2016, some 650 million adults worldwide were obese, and 381 million children and teens were overweight or obese. Wow. While many factors have fueled rising obesity rates, physical inactivity and diets loaded with too many calories and fats are a big part of the problem, according to the World Health Organization, the WHO. The current analysis examined smaller studies of nutrition training in the US, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, Asia, New Zealand, and Australia. Even when curriculum initiatives focus specifically on educating doctors about nutrition, the analysis found that these efforts had only a, quote, modest effect, end quote, on doctors' sense that they could competently provide nutrition counseling or advice to patients, the study team reports, in the Lancet Planetary Health online September 18 of this year. Medical students in many of the smaller studies expressed an interest in nutrition and a willingness to learn about it, but generally perceived their training in this topic as inadequate. Ideally, medical schools should be graduating new doctors who are well-versed in the basics of nutrition and weight management and able to steer patients to the right specialist as needed for extra help making lifestyle changes, the study team argues. This study matters because it speaks directly to the type of medical care we can expect to receive, said Dr. Stephen DeVries, author of an editorial accompanying the study and executive director of the nonprofit Gables Institute for Integrative Cardiology in Illinois. If physicians worldwide are not meaningfully educated about nutrition, how can we expect them to emphasize anything besides drug and devices? Well, I'd like to weigh in there on that comment, because I think back to the days of, you know, the beginning of the existence of medical schools, there was always involvement by the pharmaceutical industry in sponsoring and supporting medical schools. So a lot of their training, and even to this day, is pharmaceutically driven. And that is a reason for this outcome as well. Moreover, efforts by a growing number of clinicians and public health efforts to promote a plant-based diet for both patient and planetary health are not going to succeed unless doctors can address diet and nutrition issues during exams. Patients who need help eating well may need to advocate for themselves to get the support they need to succeed. Whether you are concerned about maintaining your good health, responding to some early warning sign, or treating a specific problem, ask your practitioner about opportunities for bettering your situation with diet and lifestyle. And if they can't help, request a referral to a skilled professional who can. Hear, hear to that. This is in Lancet Planet Health 2019. It was online September of this year. So yes, there should be referrals made by doctors and other practitioners. Doctors advising in nutrition, unless they are credentialed themselves, are really not qualified. Think about this. I work with a doctor, an MD, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, but he is qualified. He is a certified nutrition specialist. He is a credentialed nutritionist, right? So you can take nutritional advice from him. That's what he dispenses. We treat your medical conditions with nutrition. That is the ultimate first do no harm. Before he ever writes a prescription for any kind of medicine or drug, we dispense with nutritional advice. I am part of his team for doing that. So, doctors who are doctors, medical doctors, who are not versed in nutrition shouldn't be dispensing with any advice. They're not qualified, right? Makes sense. Hey, I'm not a chiropractor. I'm not an acupuncturist. I can't dispense with any of that, can I? I am not a doctor. I can't dispense with any of that. I am, however, a nutritionist, a registered dietitian, a certified nutritionist. I dispense with nutrition administration. I administer diets. I am a medical nutrition therapist. This distinction is important for doctors to understand about dispensing with nutrition, diet, and lifestyle information, besides the most very basic information of, you know, go out and exercise and don't eat junk food. The rest needs a referral to qualified nutritionists. That's what needs to happen. I believe it should be mandated to also have a nutrition consult after you meet with your doctor. I'm not saying that because it's self-serving. Yes, I'm a nutritionist and I would love the business. I am saying this because this is what should happen. When your pet, your dog, your cat is sick and you bring them to the vet, to the veterinarian, one of the first questions they ask is, what are you feeding him? The doctor needs to be asking, what are you eating? I need to refer you to a registered dietitian. I need to refer you to a certified nutrition specialist. I need to refer you to a qualified nutritionist that you should see and who can help you with diet and lifestyle changes. That's what needs to happen. And that's why I brought this to your attention. That medical education is not covering the basics of nutrition. And this is a wonderful opportunity for doctors to make the proper referrals. When you have a GI problem, your primary care is going to refer you to a gastroenterologist, right? When you've got a problem with your liver, your doctor will refer you to a hepatologist. When you've got some kind of a anemia or some kind of a blood disorder, a blood count disorder, you are referred to a hematologist. When you need changes in diet and lifestyle, you should be referred to a nutritionist. Same kind of thing. Hey, did you know there's a scientific reason why we crave junk food when we don't get enough sleep? So, it's 3 a.m. and you're awake for the second night in a row. You get up, you stumble to the kitchen for some warm milk that mom says will put you back to sleep. So why are you having a cookie? Why are you having ice cream? When you're sleep deprived, you're not like, oh, you know what? I want some carrots or I want some broccoli. This is from a behavioral neuroscientist, Aaron Hanlon, who studies the connection between brain systems and behavior at the University of Chicago. What is it about sleep exhaustion and junk food? The answer lies in history. Back when we dug the dirt, we dug in the dirt for starchy tubers, foraged for sweet berries, and gorged on fatty fish. Simply put, a lack of sleep triggers ancient instincts that yearn for rich and sweet fatty foods. Evolutionarily speaking, it was a big deal to have a high-carb, high-fat meal because you didn't necessarily have those all of the time. Yeah, think back to our prehistoric ancestors. It was either feast or famine. They could hunt for days, maybe not eat for days. And then they capture that woolly mammoth or that ancient rhino or whatever, whatever animals existed then that they hunted and killed and ate, right? And then they could feast for days until it all ran out, and then back to the hunt. So if you think back to feast or famine times, having a meal with lots of carbs or fat was something that your brain would say, hey, we want to have that. And they didn't have it all the time. It's only the last bit of humanity, says Aaron Hanlon, that we have been able to have food around the clock or food that is high in carbs and fats. And our brain has not evolved as quickly as the food choices that have become available. When we're up late, we are sleep deprived. That's another kind of physiological stress. When we're stressed throughout the day, we're not looking for a carrot stick. We're not looking for broccoli. That's not going to soothe us. We're looking for candy. We're looking for cake. We're looking for chips. We're looking for carby foods. We're looking to medicate ourselves because these foods will boost your serotonin, quite quickly. That bowl of mashed potatoes or that bowl of ice cream or that bowl of macaroni and cheese will do the trick. Your stir-fry broccoli will not. Your steamed broccoli will not. So, Dr. Raj Dasgupta says, I always tell my patients to think about these things. You may have heard about two hormones that control our urge to eat, leptin and ghrelin. Dr. Dasgupta says, I always tell my patients to think about them by their first letter. And Dr. Dasgupta is the Associate Program Director of the Sleep Medicine Fellowship at Keck Medicine of USC. The L in leptin stands for lose. It suppresses appetite and therefore contributes to weight loss. May I add that leptin is secreted by our fat cells. So the more fat we lose, the less leptin is secreted. Think about it. When we're overweight, obese, leptin is being secreted. At least when we're overweight, it's being secreted. And before leptin resistance occurs, which is similar to insulin resistance, leptin tells us, okay, shut it down. You have enough fat stores, you're fine. But when we lose weight, less and less leptin is secreted, right? Because now you have a need for those additional calories. The G in ghrelin stands for grain. Gain stands for gain. I like the G in ghrelin to stand for grr, your stomach growling, hunger pains, right? Hunger, growling, hunger. This fast-acting hormone increases hunger and leads to weight gain. When you're sleep-deprived, research shows ghrelin levels spike, where leptin takes a nosedive. The result, of course, then, is an increase in hunger. But food is food, so that doesn't explain why we crave candy instead of carrots. I just explained to you as a side note why it does. Carrots and broccoli don't boost our serotonin, we know that. It's the same reason others may reach for alcohol or marijuana or something to self-medicate or overeat food. When we're overeating, we're not eating a bushel of broccoli. We're eating a box of cookies or a sleeve of Oreo cookies or a big box of crackers or a big bag of potato chips, right? Or a pint of Häagen-Dazs. So they say, but food is food, so that doesn't explain why we crave candy instead of carrots. To answer that, you have to look at another system in the body, the endocannabinoid system. Its job is to keep our body in homeostasis or equilibrium as it regulates everything from sleep to appetite to inflammation to pain and more. So we know that it's an ancient system evolving eons ago, and it's the most primitive system that we know of, right? And it triggers the munchies, right? Any of you who have smoked marijuana, you've gotten the munchies. We know that you can infuse endocannabinoids into specific regions of animals' brains and make them eat. Okay, says Hanlon. They will eat specific things, more palatable things. They will choose sucrose, which is table sugar, over saccharin. Despite the fact that in theory both taste the same, but the sucrose has more carbs. Researchers now believe it could be the endocannabinoid system that triggers our hedonistic cravings for starchy, sugary foods. And just like with leptin and ghrelin, sleep deprivation seems to make it worse. Okay. In a study published in 2016, Hanlon compared the circulating levels of 2-AG, one of the most abundant endocannabinoids, in people who got 4 nights of normal sleep, more than 8 hours, to people who only got 4.5 hours of sleep. People who were sleep deprived reported greater increases in hunger and appetite and had higher afternoon concentrations of 2-AG than those who slept well. They also had a rough time controlling their urges for high-carb, high-calorie snacks. Why? We don't know, Hanlon says. All this research is so new that science doesn't yet know how it all fits together or what can be done about it. And that brings us to the bottom line. There is not going to be a pill anytime soon for sleep-deprived junk food junkies that we are. Instead, you'll have to do what the doctor says to reduce your illicit cravings in the middle of the night. And that is get more sleep. Again, another trigger, which they don't mention here, and you've heard me talk about it on this podcast before. When we don't get enough sleep, our cortisol rises. When we're sleep deprived, our cortisol rises. Cortisol is a stress hormone. That stress hormone is not relieved by broccoli and carrots. It's relieved by carbohydrates. So that is another reason. Get more sleep to reduce your cravings. All of you who are doing all the right things, a terrific low-carb diet, good amounts of exercise, high-intensity interval training, cardio, balance with weight training, giving equal time to weight training to build your muscles, and you find you're still not losing weight and you're not using any sugar or fake sugars, you're not using aspartame, you're not using Splenda, you're not using any of those, you're still not losing weight, it could be that because you're not sleeping enough. The required amount of sleep for most adults is between 6 and 8 hours. If you're not getting that, that could be the reason. Is your higher circulating cortisol, or the fact that your sleep deprivation is simply causing more craving in you. Think about it. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In, here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.